And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single episode ever of Star Wars The Clone Wars. I lost it for a second there. In this episode, a full-scale revolt embroils Alderaan. The Rebel Strike, I just messed all that up. Let's try that again. In this episode... You can leave all that in, Chris. Don't worry about editing that out.
Oh, thank you.
It's okay when I fuck up. It's fine. In this episode, as a full-scale revolt embroils Alderaan, the Rebels strike a decisive blow against the planet's Separatist-aligned king. Unfortunately for the Rebels, such a victory comes at a high price. There will be not only the end of this arc, but I'm going to argue that this episode is one of the top 10 most important episodes of Clone Wars. We're talking about tipping points this week. How are you doing, Chris?
Good.
I messed all that up. It's fine. I was like, this is going to be such an important episode, and I fuck up the opening. I was just like,
This could possibly be the most important episode of J-Guys and Jedi ever.
No, I would have really fucked up it, but I was like, this could be the most important episode of Star Wars Monthly Mondays. Fuck! Which you're starting back.
What?
You're starting back with Star Wars Monthly Mondays.
Yes, we are. And Star Trek Monthly Mondays.
How's that going?
It's going really good. We just had a fun recording session yesterday with two... I wouldn't say they were great episodes, but we had a great time with them, so...
That's about good. All I'll say, yeah.
You just have to listen to believe or hear. See.
You get to hear the Star Trek original series episode that almost broke Scott Gardner the first time.
What do you mean broke? Like, it was so bad he was just like,
it was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Like he almost rage quit Star Trek?
Well, we when we picked out that episode as the next episode, I could hear him just like,
Oh, Scott, I believe in you. Tell Scott I believe in him.
Well, we made it through it. It was actually, we had a riot with it, actually.
That's good. Yeah, I had a pretty straightforward week. I just went to work and wrote a lot, and yeah, it was fun. Watched the Super Bowl. That was cool.
Yeah,
the Han Solo trailer.
I saw the Han Solo trailer.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
I gotta say this. I want some color in my Han. I want my Han Solo movie to be colorful. You know what I mean?
It is pretty dark, white, and pretty tan.
It looks like Rogue One, and it looks like Rogue One, you know?
I didn't get the Rogue One feeling. I got more of like a Snowpiercer Geonosis kind of feeling. Like everything was either white, black, or tan.
Yeah, and I want some, and, you know, I don't want to start griping about it because I have no idea, you know? The actor, I can't tell if I'm gonna like him or not as Han Solo, through what little I saw of him. But I like that they're going and doing like, you know, he goes into the Imperial Academy, that sort of thing. But I'm not into this Han Solo movie, him having the Millennium Falcon and being friends with Chewie already. You know what I mean?
I think they're, like, part of the heist, because this looks like a heist movie.
Yeah, I think
part of the heist is stealing the Millennium Falcon.
Maybe. Well, the Millennium Falcon used to belong to Lando, so it was Lando's ship for a while, and Han Solo won it from him. So it might not even be Han Solo's ship this time, but it's like, I'd rather have it be like a buddy movie with Han Solo and Lando Calrissian in a series of, you know, junky cargo ships that they steal or whatever, you know, and build up towards that, build up towards Chewie, and build up towards having the Millennium Falcon. You know, they have plenty of time.
Yeah. So, well, for all we know, like, maybe he's not, like, really close with Chewie at this point. Like, maybe they've, like, had a couple jobs, but maybe, like, this is the one job that, like, solidifies their friendship. Yeah, we just don't know enough about it.
Well, I guess Chewie had some sort of life debt to Han Solo, too. So Han Solo saves Chewie in some way.
Yeah.
Probably, if they're sticking to that storyline, which I would imagine they would.
Man, like, my thing is, I'm all about Donald Glover in that fur coat cape thing.
He's the thing that looks most convincing on it, and I'm not talking about the color of his skin, but he's got some colorful outfit, and it looks like there's a scene with him in some sort of...
He looks like Lando,
like
my
strip
God.
Strip joint or something, and the woman's all colored in gold and stuff. That looks more like that what I expect from a Han Solo movie. You know, I want a colorful, bright caper movie, you know. And I don't know. We'll see. I don't think since episode one I've seen a Star Wars trailer for a Star Wars movie that's gotten me, like, wound up. Like, really wound up. So,
to be honest, like, I get more, like, super, like, wound up over Rebels trailers.
Yeah, I'm more involved in it. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I when this last trailer dropped for the second half of the season 4 finale, like, I was in tears. I was like, I saw that it dropped walking into the parking lot to my job, and I'm like, I'm going to be late. And I watched it, like, standing in the parking lot, and I was just tearing up walking inside. My boss was like, are you okay? And I'm just like, yeah, hi, I'm here. Sorry, I'm late. So,
yeah, I mean, I've liked all the new Star Wars movies so far, but the trailers have not been what gets me excited about them. Well, I just don't get excited till I get in the seat. And then when I get in the seat, I'm just like, yeah, you know, when I'm walking into the theater, it's all good.
The two things that really just stood out to me was Donald Glover as Lando. Like, he really stole the trailer for me. The other one that stood out to me was that shot of, like, the swirling clouds, and then there's lightning, and you see a Star Destroyer in there.
That's a neat shot.
I gasped. I actually audibly gasped at that moment. It was so pretty. It actually reminded me of Jonna Marie from Rebels Chat pointed this out on Twitter. It reminded me of the episode of Rebels into the Lasat episode where they're flying into the star cluster. It had kind of that feel, but just way darker.
Rebels and Clone Wars have had really beautiful scenes with spaceships like that before in cloudy settings and stuff. And, I didn't see any sort of form or coherence to it. I just saw a bunch of shots that they got together, you know. And
it was
neat. I mean, I wasn't watching it going, oh, God, this is stupid, you know. It's just I didn't really garner anything about it as towards the feel of it, or it looks like it would be serious and dark, but apparently it's got sort of a comedic tone to it. So,
you know, Woody Harrelson was more Han Solo like in that trailer than anything else.
Well, I think that's going to be the point. I think he's going to be he called him kid, so
yeah.
he's going to be Han's role model, you know.
Yeah. But we'll just have to see. May will be here before I know it. Man, May's going to wreck me between, like, Infinity War and Solo. Jesus Christ.
Infinity War is another one. I'm not going to be excited for it till I'm in the theater, and then I'll be like, ooh, boy, this is going to be fun.
I'm more hyped for Black Panther this weekend. Like, I've been debating, like...
Oh, it does start this weekend. Okay.
Yeah, I've been debating, like, between going after one of my shifts or waiting until Sunday when I have the day off. Because if I go after one of my shifts, I'll get to see it early. I won't run the risk of being spoiled, but I'll get out at, like, 1 a.m. But if I wait until Sunday, I can be nice and fresh, but then I run the risk of being spoiled.
Right.
I'm so hyped for Black Panther. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one, too.
I just, I can't wait.
More so than Infinity Wars. Yeah, for sure.
You know, I'm excited about Infinity Wars, but probably not as excited as I am for Black Panther. But at the same time for Infinity War, I'm sort of dreading it.
It sounds like a boss battle to me. They always do, though. So, but you know, I'm sure it'll be fun, and it's gonna be the crossover with Guardians of the Galaxy too.
Well, what intrigues me is the fact that it's split into two movies. That there's this movie, there's gonna be a bunch of movies in between, and then there's the next Infinity War movie. So that's what kind of intrigues me. But one of my friends was a extra on set. And usually when he's an extra on set, like, he can... I mean, as long as we don't, like, tell anything beforehand. Like, he just finished Venom, and... He finished Venom, and he got to film with Riz Ahmed. Ooh. He sat behind him in a scene, and I was just, like, laying on the floor, just screaming how blessed he was. He had to film with Riz Ahmed. I'm so mad. But, like, when it came to Infinity War, he was like, I literally can't tell you anything that I saw that I... While filming, like, I can't. Like, and it's the first time he hasn't been able to tell me anything. Yeah. Like, he was in Spider-Man Homecoming, and he could tell me all about, like, what happened with Tom Holland and stuff like that. And when he was in Civil War, he was like, yeah, it was in the scene, you know, where T'Challa's dad got shot. We were like, T'Challa's dad got shot? What? But he was like, I can't tell you anything about Infinity War. I absolutely can't. But the scene I was in was so crazy. And it's going to break someone's heart. And I was just like, oh, no! So, it'll be interesting. Well, tipping points?
Tipping points.
Let's tip
this. This could be a long one, guys, so settle in.
Oh, this is going to be a long one, guys. I have a shit ton of notes.
But don't worry, there's candy at the end.
There is, not for you guys.
They should all buy a candy bar and have it ready for when they listen to Jay Guys and Jedi, so they don't hate us after a while.
You mean like how I was in the early days of candy before I got candy too, where I would buy a candy bar every week just so I had something to eat angrily?
Yeah, well, I chewed away, yeah.
Your guys' candy is listening to us. Yay. All right, you ready?
Yes, siri.
Tipping Points is the 93rd episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on October 27th, 2012. It was written by Chris Collins and directed by Bosco Ng. By the way, John M. Wilson, thanks for sending me that on Twitter about how to say that. So, yeah. Some extra information for you. An unscripted response from the droid, from the lead droid gunship says, "By your command," a nod to the classic Cylons from the original Battlestar Galactica series. They actually kind of look like Cylons in the face. This episode takes place chronologically before Revival, the opening episode of the season. This is why Hondo's base is still intact. Hondo's yacht is named the Fortune and Glory, a nod to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, where Indy and Short Round talk about seeking out fortune and glory. When Lux points out that Steela's courage is all well and good, but what good does that do if she gets herself killed, is a deliberate echo of a line Luke Skywalker says about Han Solo in A New Hope. The saucer-shaped droid gunships were first seen over Kashyyyk in Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. The design of the droid gunship stems from a saucer shape used in the development of Trade Federation vessels seen in Episode 1. The Rebels' base nicknamed The Nest is appropriate because it's situated on cliff face alongside giant Rooping nests, and Roopings are those birds that they ride on in this episode. One thing to note at the end of the episode, Count Dooku tells Kalani to pull out his troops and take them to the planet of Agamar. That's where Kalani stays for the remainder of the Clone Wars. He is stationed there. He is still stationed there when Rex, Kanan, and Ezra find him in Star Wars Rebels all those years later. You know who also angrily eats candy? That sounded pretty happy. Yoda never gets candy.
All this food, do you?
That's what you get, Yoda, for being you. You don't get candy.
Unless Yoda wants candy.
Well, just go to a brothel and find a girl named Candy. Shouldn't be hard.
Oh, it should be. it should be.
I actually really like this week's platitude with the yes. embed.
Yoda does too. Disobedience is a demand for change. In bed?
Yay! Yoda's, yeah!
Yoda's been very disobedient. Bad Yoda. Bad Yoda.
Yes, ma'am. Can I have another?
Yoda is so sorry.
I'm not feeding into this anymore.
Yoda, Yoda needs a change. Who will change Yoda?
I'm just gonna sip my coffee. Act one!
Act one!
Let's go.
Who will change Yoda?
He lives with you, so you. you get to be all up in that. Act one. I just imagine you like changing Yoda's diapers.
I'm getting the
like,
space.
Yes!
I'm getting the space huggies out.
You're just like legs up, schwump. All right, Act One. To catch you up, the planet of Onderon is under Separatist rule. They have a puppet king, Sanjay Rash, who enforces the law. A group of rebels led by Stila Guerrera have worked the last three episodes to bring an end to the occupation and free the people of Onderon. Her brother is Saw Gerrera. Yes, that's Saw Gerrera from Rogue One in Rebels, who hasn't been the most on board about letting his baby sister lead, but he's okay. Lux Bonteri, the sometimes eye candy of Ahsoka Tano, has joined the Rebels. Ahsoka's been there too. She was left behind on Onderon to oversee their development, but for plot reasons unknown, she wasn't able to fight with them. And so last week, when they sprang the real King Ramses Dend up, who we call King Denim, just because it's easier to say King Denim, they sprang him out of prison. Oh, and there's also a stupid love triangle between Steela, Lux, and Ahsoka. There's also a robot droid named Kalani, who's only real important because he makes it to the Star Wars Rebels timeline. And there's a human general named Tandon, who now sided the military with the Rebels. We ended last week with Ahsoka telling Obi-Wan and Anakin about the Separatists knowing the Jedi funded the Rebels. The Jedi Council has to make a decision about whether or not to act. On to this week! The Rebels put out little hologram devices around the city of Isis so King Denim can address his subjects saying, "Hey, guys! Just wanted to clear up some stuff. The so-called terrorists that King Rash is all about are actually the heroes, and I, like, join them now, so yay! Stand up to those Separatists and fight for your right to party!" And the people do fight for their right. To mess up some droids! And, I don't know. Out in the wilderness at the Rebel base, Saw and Lux are like, "Woo! People are rioting! Awesome!" But Steela throws a wet blanket on top of them, going, "We have to take the fight outside the city or people will get hurt." Saw battles back, saying that the main droid forces are inside of Isis, and they should take the fight to the king's doorstep. He claims that this is war and people die. And Steela doesn't want innocent people to die, but Saul doesn't seem to care. King Denim and Ahsoka both agree with Steela that they'll have a better chance of fighting in the wilderness. The king puts Steela in charge of the royal army because Steela is the best boss ever at everything. Lux is awkward, and Steela kisses him while Ahsoka bro punches Lux in the arm to congratulate him, and thank God Ahsoka seems to be okay with things, because teen romance triangles are just ugh. They ride out to the upcoming battle. Meanwhile, King Rash is rightfully scared for his puppet king position with rioting in the streets. Kalani says they will crush the rebels. The people will fall back into place from fear. He sends out his droid armies to attack the rebels. What did you think of Act 1?
It was okay.
Set up for the final showdown.
Nice shot of a droid going up a dino butt. And before she kisses Lux, she says "just in case," which is pretty close to the "just for luck" from Star Wars before Princess Leia kisses her brother.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that the teen romance thing is resolved now, basically, at least with Ahsoka, and she's just sort of like, all right, dude, getting some, you know?
Yeah, because that was my thing. Like, I don't mind Lux and Steela together. It was just awkward that Ahsoka was in the middle of it.
Was always in the background going like, oh, but I like, want to kiss him.
I have a note somewhere in this episode about it, too. But, like, on one hand, I do, like, appreciate the story of, like, Ahsoka struggling with those feelings for the first time. And Anakin just being like, I totally know what you're going through, yeah. Wink, wink.
I'm like, kind of done with it after that, though. That's enough of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's me. Like, yeah, like, I liked what it did for Ahsoka's character, but if it carried on into this episode, oh my god, like, spoiler alert, Steela dies. And, like, that could have been, like, a huge debate about, like, whether or not Ahsoka let Steela die because
right,
of
right. I'm glad they did not go there. Oh my god, I'm glad they didn't go there.
Yeah.
And my only other note is, man, I like those Klingon. They're sort of like a Klingon mix, and I'm glad they said Cylons because they are sort of a mixture of Klingon and Cylon ships.
Yeah,
with the Cylon voices, and yeah, I did not notice them in Episode 3 in Kashyyyk at all.
Yeah, apparently
I thought they were new for this episode. I thought they were pretty sporty, actually.
Yeah, they kind of look like tiny Starship Enterprises. They have the round top and the little two things on the back.
They got like a Klingon head and a Cylon ship body, and then they've got Klingon or a Cylon, you know, like
faces,
lights across the face, yeah, and voices. So they were pretty cool, pretty badass, man. But that's all I really had to say about the first part of this.
For me, I just love the entire opening scene with the battle droids. Like, one of the droids checking the hologram, and his friends were like flicking him on, just like, go on, go on, go on, do it. And then, like, they don't understand why people are mad at them, because they're like, we didn't do anything! Why are you mad at us? I love the battle droids, Chris. I love them. Also, in this opening scene, when, like, Saul and Lux are just like, yeah, rioting! And Steel is like, yeah, no, that's bad. And Saul is just like, but it's war! Blah.
Yeah, he's enjoying war a bit too much, you know?
Yeah, and I like that, because it kind of gives those, like, future hints about Saul Guerrera in the future. Like, he calls writing a beautiful thing. And, like, he wants to find the streets, and he doesn't care about innocent lives. And this is just, like, the Saul he becomes in, like, Rebels and Rogue One. It actually reminded me of the scene. I'm going to be able to talk about so many Rogue One notes now that I wasn't able to talk about in the commentary. I'm so excited. It actually reminded me of the scene of Rogue One when Saul's men are fighting in the streets of Jedha and they're fighting the stormtroopers and, like, Cassian and Jyn are there. There's that shot with the little girl crying in the streets. And none of Saul's men care that there's a baby in the streets, and it's Jyn that has to run out and save right. this baby in the streets. Like, that's what it reminded me of, because that was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, I wish I would have seen this first.
yeah, I know. That's why I find it so interesting. Actually, skipping way ahead to Act 3 and stuff like that. I asked you in Episode 1 of this arc, because I had seen this first, and then Rebels, and then Rogue One. You saw Rogue One, Rebels, and then this.
Right.
Like, how do you feel like that's, like, affected your view of Saul?
Well, like I've been saying all through this arc, I'm expecting him to go batshit at any time, you know? Mm-hmm. And even in this episode, I was like, okay, this is the episode where Saw goes batshit. But he might be internally, but you don't see it, or there's no hint of it. So they're playing him really subtly. But I like that. I like that it's that he's got a nuanced arc, you know. And I mean, if I was just watching this, I would have thought, well, that's the end of these characters, you know. Onto the next arc, but he's obviously coming back because he does establish his character as being, you know, an insurgent who has no care for, you know, civilian casualties, or what's the more euphemistic term for it?
Fire.
Like collateral damage. That's it. He's not too concerned with collateral damage.
Like, do you see why, like, when I found out, so I was going into Rogue One, like, why I was, like, so emotional? It was like, oh my god, a Clone Wars character in Rogue One!
Yeah, and a real character. You know, it's not just, like, they didn't just throw on some walk-on character. They threw on somebody who got developed, you know? Who's an actual three-dimensional character. He's the most developed character in Rogue One.
If you know
Clone Wars, if you don't know Clone Wars, he's just this guy. He's kind of underdeveloped, you know. Just went in cold.
That's actually what happened when I went with my friends. Like, me and my friend Paige had watched Clone Wars, but all the other guys that we were with, they had never seen Clone Wars, so they didn't understand Saw Gerrera.
He was just
didn't...
a cameo by Forrest Whitaker, you know, and a lot of the critics said stuff like that too.
So, like, me and Paige were trying to explain, like, the person who Saw Gerrera is, and like why he was like such, like why he was the way he was, and they just didn't get it. And that's why, like, I guess that's like the pitfall of kind of Rogue One. Like we know who he is and stuff,
right,
so like
right.
we can really
that's
appreciate
the pitfall
him.
Of extended universe stuff outside of the movies is
yeah
and the people who read the books get more of that stuff too, you know,
as we'll see in Act 3, as I wrote an entire note about books. My next note is, look at my girl Steela becoming general of an army.
Yeah, they're just gonna vote her in. She's gonna be dog catcher, she's gonna be on the city council, it's just gonna be whenever they vote for somebody to do something, it's gonna be Steela from that point on.
Steela's gonna get a letter and be like, congratulations, you're the king now, and she's like, what?
Yeah, and then whatchamacallit, she wins the lottery, and they show up with a big check, and...
The Publisher's Clearinghouse?
Publisher's Clearinghouse. That's what I was trying to think of, yes. They show up at her door.
My next note is, I kind of talked about this a little bit with Ahsoka, about how I was just happy that they moved past the team drama, because they could have, like, easily wrote the love triangle, quote-unquote, with Lux and Steela, and Saw being the disapproving big brother. Like, that would have been fine, but, like, because they threw a Jedi into the mix... And it was, oh, here's my note. It was interesting that Ahsoka had growth and Anakin had a lady on the side. It just wasn't the strongest story of this arc, so I'm glad that it's finally done.
Yeah. I didn't want it to go anywhere, and I'm pretty glad it did when it didn't, when it stopped, and it was like, okay, they're done pursuing that. That's done. Because they've been teasing that it could be something that could have something to do with something in the story, and I was really hoping that it didn't.
Yeah,
and
I didn't want, like,
so that's great.
I remember watching this episode, like, after Steela's death, I was like, please don't have, like, mm-hmm. Ahsoka and Lux making out now that Steela's out of the picture. That'd be awful.
Yep.
That would not only, like, discredit the character of Steela and, like, cheapen her death, but it would just be a terrible choice on Lux and Ahsoka's part.
Or they
Especially
would have something
Ahsoka.
Where Lux hated Ahsoka for, you know, not say, you know, held it against her or something like that.
Yeah, I'm glad it just worked out.
Held it against Saw.
But yeah. My last note of Act One is one thing caught my eye, and it was between the caught my ear, and it was the scene between King Rash and Kalani. And they changed up their word choice, because they spent the entire arc calling Steela's men terrorists. And we've been talking about it, like, all three episodes on the show about how terrorist insurgents are just about point of view and stuff like that. However, in this opening scene, they started addressing them as rebels.
Yeah, no, I think that's on purpose.
And so that was my question. Like, I wasn't sure if it was just, like, because I think Chris Collins only wrote one other episode in this. So I wasn't sure if it was accidental on the writer's part, or if it was on purpose to show that this is the beginning of the Rebel Alliance in the original trilogy.
Well,
the
writer's the writer, but it's still, even though the writer, this is from talking with George Kurstick, he's like, what he wrote for his episode, he said, was, you know, very different than what was the end product, that because they take it in and then they, you know, they can't tell all the writers where every story arc is going and everything. So then they'll take a story script and then they'll shore it up with where they're going and what they're doing. And I think at this point, and it seems like especially in this arc with the narrator and everything, they're really like pumping up the word rebel and the idea of, like, all right, we've got to start, you know, showing this is the time right here where the rebellion started, even before the Empire, you know, the rebellion was starting. And this is where the seeds of it and will form into the thing that fights the Empire, you know? So I think they methodically were like at writers' meetings or even like, you know, just show meetings going like, well, we need to start drumming this up, you know, we need to start getting that word out there.
Yeah. But that's all I have for Act 1.
Act 2?
Act 2! Act 2. Two octo.
Octo.
We're nerds, it's fine. Act 2! The battle for Onderon begins. Saw attacks from the air while Tandon leads the troops from the ground. Steela and her snipers fight from the rock ledges above. It's going really well, until it doesn't. The droid saucer ships show up, blowing the rebel sky forces out of the sky and attacking the gunners on the rock ledges. Steela, Ahsoka, and Lux have no choice but to run from their position. Saul tries to blow up one of the droid airships, but it's ray shielded and it does no harm. The ground troops are getting wiped out fast. Ahsoka calls in a desperate plea to her dads, Obi-Wan and Anakin, but the council has denied getting involved since it's an internal affair for the planet. Ahsoka's like, they have this new gunship that's bad, and they could use it against us, and, dads, I need help, guys. And Obi-Wan says that she needs to evacuate with whoever she can and bring her, whoever she can bring with her, and hangs up on her. And Anakin's pissed wanting to fight because it's Anakin. He makes a very valid point that the Separatists know the Jedi helped, so why hold back now? But Obi-Wan doesn't disagree, but they supposedly can't do anything because Jedi policies are crap and hypocritical. Anakin comes up with the best plan ever to help the rebels of Onderon. Call Obi-Wan's self-proclaimed pirate best friend, Hondo Ohnaka! It's a Hondo episode, guys. I'm so excited. Meanwhile, Ahsoka tells Steela and Lux that the Republic can't help them. And Lux is like, see? This is why I'm not joining the Republic. They are assholes. The rebels have no choice but to retreat and regroup. Meanwhile, Anakin arrives on Florum and meets up with Hondo. And Hondo is like, hey, where's my best friend Obi-Wan? And Anakin's like, he sends his regards. And that's enough for Hondo. Anakin makes him a deal. He'll pay Hondo enough credits to not ask questions if Hondo will illegally deliver some missiles to Onderon. At the rebel base, the spirits are sinking pretty low, but Steela makes a plan to help move the camp. They will stay in small teams, remembering their training, and stagger their defenses to slow down the droids. Saul is all proud of his little sister, and they have a sibling moment, which is just spelling bad news for the duo. Well, Ahsoka is back to the Jedi bullshit, saying that she can't fight for them, but why the hell not? Lux doesn't like that answer, rightfully so, and Steela thanks her for everything. They hear a ship landing outside, and the women run out to find Hondo! Yay! Hondo sees Steela, and he's all like, damn, girl! Hey, what's up? I like that kind of spice. It's my new favorite. I'm gonna put that in my tea. And Steela is like, ugh, what do you want? Hondo opens up a chest that he's delivered to reveal rocket launchers, a gift from Ahsoka's dads, wishing her well in the coming battle. Droids show up and Hondo's like, well, look at the time. Bye, guys. Bye, Hondo. You make all episodes better. The droid patrol is taken care of quickly. Steela, Lux, and Ahsoka grab the rocket launchers and take them back to the battle.
Yay, rocket launchers.
Yeah, I totally, like, because I usually do the episode information the night before. And then I do the actual episode notes, like the Act 1, Act 2, Act 3 stuff, the day that we record. And that way it's fresh in my brain. I kind of wish I watched the episode first, because I totally forgot Hondo was in this episode, and I got super excited when I saw that in the show notes, and I was just like, damn it, I wish I watched the episode first, because I forgot Hondo was here, and I would have been so happy. I was still happy, but still, I would have been extra happy.
It's only a cameo by Hondo, but I'm going to do a little mini version of what's coming up after Part 3. and be like, this is really important in the Hondo story, in the Hondo relationship with, like, the Jedi and Obi-Wan and stuff. And remember when we see him in Rebels, he's like, oh, they were my buddies, you know? And they've always, like, treated him with disgust. This is the turning point moment where, oh, they need Hondo, huh? You know? And you know, that's the first person they think of, you know? Oh, we could have Hondo do it. So, you know, this is where all of Hondo's known that eventually it would come to this. And it's hilarious that he, you know, over the Jedi, he's just like, oh, hey, friends, you know?
Yeah.
And this actually makes, you know, gives Hondo that much more heft as a character. I like it a lot. And it makes him more, you know, justified in his attitude towards the Jedi. I love it.
I have 2 points for that. Couple things to remember that because of this, keep in mind that Dooku knows that the Jedi are there and Hondo shows up to drop off things to a Jedi and their friends. So keep in mind that Dooku probably might notice that. And also the fact that the episode Revival, the first episode of the season with Darth Maul, Hondo's base is destroyed in that episode, because that actually takes place chronologically after this episode.
Yeah, so he don't care.
But
a base is a base for Hondo. He'll get another base. You know, he's happy go lucky.
I'm not talking about in the sense of Dooku knowing that Hondo is there.
Oh, okay.
And then Revival takes place after this. So just keep that in mind, Chris.
Right.
But for me, I still say that the turning point for Hondo was Obi-Wan showing up to help Hondo defend his men. Like, that to me is still the point where he was like, okay, these Jedi are cool. But I think this is the first point, the first starting point chronologically.
Yeah, that's just the Jedi are cool, though. But this is the Jedi are, you know, are cool with Hondo. You know, they're not really cool with him, but they're cool with him. They're dealing with
him under the level.
But they've been all snooty about, like, you know, yeah, we're only dealing with this pirate because he happens to be here at the same time, or it's to our advantage now. This time they go to his house and are like, hey man, here's some money. Do you think you could do this thing that we were always snooting about you doing before?
Yeah.
That's a hope word. Hope Mullinex word, copyright 2018, snooting.
Snooted at him.
So this is where Hondo's like, oh, the big old, you know, the high and mighty Jedi come crawling back to old Hondo, and I love it.
See, you can buy friends.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a line in here that I'm sort of paraphrasing it, but they're like, yeah, I don't even think Master Windu would go for this. What are they talking about? He don't go for anything.
I know.
You know, that line was just sort of out of place. And my only other note is I like the bird creatures. They're like Avatar, sort of.
I've never actually seen Avatar, but I know what you're talking about. I've seen, like, pictures of them. Yeah, that's all I got.
That is literally all I have for notes for part two.
For me... the first thing first is I just really like the opening battle of this arc, of this act, because there's just, like, you know, like, really cool swooping aerial shots of, like, Saw on his bird thing, and then it goes, like, he swoops down and it carries on with the ground forces with Tandon on their, like, sort of horse mounts, and then it'll swoop back up to Saw and then, like, pass by Astila. I mean, it's a really cool shot battle.
Yeah, there's a lot of this. I think their swooping camera, CGI camera technology has taken a step up in this season because they're using it a lot in this battle to good effect.
I mean, we were talking about 2 episodes ago mm-hmm. when it did the swooping shot out of the city, went around the palace, and there's King Rash.
Yeah.
So, okay, can we talk about Jedi bullshit policies? Because, like, here's the thing that really bothers me again. Because we've had a problem with the fact that Ahsoka can't act and that the Jedi can't fight for them. But our argument was, well, they're there in the street with lightsabers. How do the droids not know? And, like, this is where it gets me now, in this point right here. The Jedi are supposed to be peacekeepers. but apparently not for Onderon because it's an internal affair that they can cause. And it kind of reminded me of the Lerman episode where they were like, well, we can't fight for them. But and they're like, but we can protect them. And they ended up fighting anyway. Like, what is this bullshit peacekeeper thing? Because it's such a bullshit plot point. It really is. And it doesn't make sense because, like, this, well, I feel
I think it's all, that's all reflecting the same with Hondo. The Jedi are now at the point where they're just pretending to be living by their Jedi ethics. And they're because, really like, just sort of picking and choosing whatever they want to do, you know?
I mean, from what I can gather, because even Obi-Wan was like, I don't disagree with you, Anakin, I want to do something about it. From what I can gather is when it's a peacekeeper mission, is like, take a planet, and it's being invaded by another planet, just randomly. Like, that's when the Jedi act. But if this, like, one planet is having a civil war, then the Jedi can't pick sides. That's what I'm gathering from it. But this is different.
It's the Jedi are involved in a war, and if you don't follow through on helping protect the planet, then you're not helping them potentially be an ally to you, you know?
Yeah, because it's not an internal affair. The Separatists invaded their fucking planet, yeah. And the Separatists are the Jedi's enemies. It's not like, it's not like King Rash and King Sanjay had, like, split the military and they were having a fight. That's different. This planet has actually been invaded by their enemies.
Yeah, and the government was toppled by the Separatists.
I mean, this, like, so why is, like, this not okay, but the Republic will totally invade Umbara? What the fuck? Like, they invaded the entire planet of Umbara because Umbara was like, no, we don't want to be a part of the Republic anymore. Yep. Bye. Ah, it's crazy. And just the other example that just kept popping up in my head is end of season 4, first episode of season 5, they sat there and they hunted Maul. Like, they fucking hunted Maul for 3 episodes.
Well, that's like Jedi business. That's Jedi Sith business. They gotta do that. That's part of their DNA. They're midichlorians.
Yeah, but still, I mean, like, and even then, Yoda was like, you know what, Obi-Wan, we've been doing this long enough. Let's get back to the war. And that was weird, too.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it's not like Ahsoka would win this war, either. I mean, yeah, she would probably help, and she could swing a tide of a battle, but she couldn't take on a fucking droid army all by herself. It's just such a dumb plot point.
It's stupid. And
stupid. It's like the team romance. Oh. In big words, I totally forgot Hondo was in this episode, and I got super excited. Big words. Also, Hondo hits on a teenager. I mean, of course he would, but still.
I was just going to say, he's a pirate. His entire being is illegal. So,
his entire being is illegal.
It is. Everything he does, says, and is illegal. Everything he owns is illegal. Hitting on a teenager is not what's, even if he slept with a teenager, that's not what's going to bring Hondo down, you know. Well, maybe it will be, but, you know, that's just, you know, whatever. Just another.
I like the line, his entire being is illegal.
It is.
Oh, Chris, you won the one-liner for the night.
Thank
you. Congrats. You won the one-liner contest. You know, though, going to Lux, I don't blame him. Because, you know, he was always part of the Separatists, and then he was just like, you know, the Separatists got my mom killed and stuff, and then he was just kind of this, like, kind of in-between guy. But I don't blame him for still not wanting to be a part of the Republic and won't side with them. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's always been against the Republic, but especially now when they're like, hey, we are ready for Republic help, and the Republic's like, nah. I mean, I don't blame him. And so, like, this is why I like this episode so much, also, when it comes to him. Because just through that one moment, it shows that the Republic's corruption, without being heavy-handed like a political episode of Season 3, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's very subtle. I mean, like, he's just like, would the Republic help us? No. And he has just this look on his face of like, but this is the best time for them to ever help us. Like, this is it. Like, we want to join them. What the fuck? But it's not like in, like, Season 3 when they had those, like, the first half of Season 3 was nothing but politics. And it was just, like, shoved in there. And they're like, let's shove politics on
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, now they mix the politics. I don't know where it's going at. You know, going forward, but they've been mixing the politics in with action and story too, so it doesn't bring everything to a a standstill, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I didn't like the political episodes, but I like them. I like them.
We hated a lot of those, Chris.
We did hate a lot of them, but there were a lot of them that were really good, too.
Chris, Jar Jar. I mean, I liked Jar Jar, but you hated Jar Jar on a table flipping cups.
Yeah, that's different.
But it worked.
You know, the story arc where Uncle Greedo got killed was pretty decent political intrigue.
That's true. That's true. And Chief Devo, Police Chief Devo, is just
right.
Wonderful. I named a character in my book after Chief Devo, actually. Because I like that character so much. I named a character in my book. I gave him Devo's last name because I love him. The only other note I have is I actually kind of wondered what would happen if Anakin paid Hondo enough to stay and fight with the rebels. But that's just me. Like, I was wondering, like, what would that look like?
Yeah,
that would have been fun.
They probably wouldn't go that far because they wouldn't know what would happen, although it would probably be a good idea. Probably help.
It would have been a good idea.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Hondo would just be like, well, I need, like, 3 times the money.
Yeah.
And I'm going to need a piece of Onderon to hide a base on. And, like, he, like, sets up camp. And the king is just like,
where are Anakin and Obi-Wan getting this money, too?
Yeah. They drain, like, the Jedi trust fund or something.
Right. Yeah, right.
They took away Kanan Jarrus's college fund. Kanan is just like training to be a Padawan in the Clone Wars, and he's just like, where'd all my college money go? And Deba Biaba's like, we gave it to a pirate. Sorry, Kanan.
He went to buy some space peanut butter cups at the dispensary, and they're just like, sorry, kid, your line of credit's gone.
Yeah. Though, I kind of like the idea of, like, if Hondo helped fight at the end scene when everyone's, like, mourning Steela, Hondo's just like, when do I get my throne? Don't I get part of the palace? What the hell? Yeah, that end scene would have been way different. But that's all I have for Act 2. Act 3? All
right, this is a big one.
Okay, guys, strap in. Like, seriously, this is... Steela's death is, like, a 5-part note in mine. Strapping, guys. Act 3. Back at the battle, Steela gives Saw a rocket launcher. And Saw's like, awesome, let's go! And he runs down to the battlefield. He easily blows up a gunship, and Saw goes, oh my god, I need 12 of these. This is my new girlfriend, guys. I love you, rocket launcher. But it's no downtime for Steela. The droids are attacking the base, coming after the king. She hops on her flying animal with Lux and Ahsoka and book it back to base. Steela gets back first and takes out the gunship. King Denim tries to get out with some guards while the fighting is going on, with Lux and Ahsoka arriving on the scene to fight the droids. King Denim runs up to a cliff ledge and is trapped, but Steela is the MVP of this episode and saves the king again. Are you guys ready for some feelings? Here's our feelings. Saul uses his new girlfriend, the rocket launcher, to take out the final droid ship. Only it careens into the cliff where Steela and King Denim are standing. The cliff breaks as she pushes the king to safety. She jumps and manages to grab the edge of the ledge. Lux tries to reach for her while Saul sees his sister dangling from the cliff and freaks out. Lux slips off the edge, but Ahsoka catches him with the Force first. The order of the sequence is important. She gets Lux to safety first. She then turns her attention to Steela, using the Force to lift her up second. As she's almost got Steela to safety, the crashed droid ship fires and shoots Ahsoka in the shoulder. Ahsoka falls back and drops Steela to her death. Back in the palace, King Rash is complaining to Count Dooku about how the Count's droids are failing and he needs more reinforcements. And Dooku's like, meh. I'm not interested in a big civil war on one planet when I'm trying to rule an entire galaxy. Kalani, pull out the troops and go to Agamar, where you'll wait there for like 20 or more years until Kanan, Ezra, and Rex show up to fight you on another TV show. Have fun, Rash, bye! And Rash is like, what now? But Kalani shoots King Rash dead and leaves his body on the throne Rash loves so much. And he can't eat any more figs, so all the figs are safe. Lux and Ahsoka fly down to Steela's body where Saw is holding his baby sister. Saw blames himself, but Lux said Steela knew the risk to free Alderaan. With the droids gone, Alderaan is free, and they hold a public funeral for Steela. Obi-Wan and Anakin are there, and Obi-Wan's like, so, we really, really messed up our daughter this time. But it's Anakin that reels Obi-Wan back in, focusing on Steela, who will be a powerful spirit in everybody's lives. Ahsoka is doubting the cost of Steela's life was worth all of this, but Lux says that she would have been happy that Onderon was free. He's also now the new senator for Onderon, and he pledges to bring Onderon back to the Republic. The end.
Bah, bah. See, I knew you'd have a lot to say. I only have one note for this. And that's a nasty burn. They very rarely show wounds on people in Clone Wars. And they made sure to see that, like, Ahsoka had a nasty burn on her shoulder.
I think it went through her, because I remember there's a, when she fell back, there's a hole on the front of her shoulder, too.
Jeez.
Yeah, because they're, like, you, because of the glowing on her shoulder when she falls back and gets shot.
Yikes. Well, she recovers pretty well. Like, she doesn't have just, like, you'd think her arm would just be sort of dangling limp or whatever, but.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a blaster bolt. I mean,
she
it's not, like.
She must have blunted it with the force or something, but. Either way, they made sure that you saw that, like, it did some damage to her. And that's something you don't usually see in Clone Wars, so I definitely made a mental and physical note of it. All right, Hope, it's all you.
Okay. I need a drink of coffee for
okay?
this. Uh-huh. First and foremost, I just want to take a moment to note the importance of Steela's character at the time that this episode came out. So we're talking 2012. Back in 2012, there hadn't been that many people of color in Star Wars, and certainly not women of color either. And then comes Steela, who is this amazing woman of color who becomes a leader, and she was smart and strong, and she was kind, and she cared about her people. And I remember back then, because by this time I wasn't watching Star Wars actively, because this was the later half of... Actually, I was out of college during this time, so I didn't... 2012. I was out of college, so like I was not watching Clone Wars at the time. But I remember like suddenly reading all these posts about Steela, and I was like, who is this person? And I started like... And fans were celebrating why she was so important to many of them. And many of them were saying like it was the first time that they got to see themselves in a Star Wars character, which shows, again, why representation matters. I mean, I know what it's like to grow up and not see yourself in a lot of characters, but I can't even imagine being, like, a woman of color not seeing myself in a Star Wars character. And I honestly believe that characters like Steela in Clone Wars is why we could have such a diverse movie like Rogue One. And she was one of the early gateways for us to have a movie like Rogue One, to have, like, these characters now, like Finn and Rey and like Rose and stuff like that in Star Wars. And it was like Steela was one of those first characters that let us have what we have today in Star Wars.
I think, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay, ready? I have six big points broken into many points. I have points within points about Steela's death. Are you ready?
Start pointing.
Okay, number one. And this has 2 points.
If I was a real dick, I'd be going every 30 seconds going, so Hope, what's your point?
Don't. I'll hang up on you. So number one, like, God, that has to be so brutal for Ahsoka to lose someone like that. Like the reason I noted, like, who she picked up separately, like she did Lux first and then Steela. Like, if she had just done something just slightly differently, like, picking up both Lux and Steela at the same time, it would have had a different ending.
Well, everybody involved in that, except for really the king, but Lux, Steela, or well, Lux and Ahsoka and Saw, all from their own point of views could totally blame themselves. Or they could totally blame someone else. Or they could blame, you know, they could blame one of the other two. You know, all three of them sort of have this whole, like, I mean, it's none of their faults. They all, you know, except for Saw, who couldn't, they were all trying to save her. So, but, it sets up a situation where they could all feel guilty or they could all take it out on someone else. And they didn't let it go into that. There wasn't any finger pointing or anything, and I like that.
Yeah.
If anybody was pointing fingers, they were all pointing them at themselves.
Yeah, which, and I feel like this death is probably very different for Ahsoka. I mean, this is different from, like, the clones she leads. Like, you know, the clones are, like, raised to be soldiers, and they know what they're getting into. But Ahsoka personally trained Stayla and her men. And she even said, I think it was the last episode or the episode before, that she felt personally responsible for these rebels. And she spent, like, a lot of time with them, and she got to know Stayla on a deeper level, and they could have been friends past this. So I feel like this death is totally different for Ahsoka, and this is one that's going to haunt her for a very long time.
Yeah, it's something that she's seen before, but this time it's personal.
Yeah, I mean, this is a hard loss for Ahsoka, and like even Obi-Wan noted it. Like, he was just like, Anakin, we messed up our kid this time. Like, we messed her up. Point number two. Holy crap, they showed Stila's body twice. Like, they showed Stila's body at the bottom of the ravine, and then they also showed Stila's body with Saul holding her. Like, that's pretty intense for a Star Wars kid show.
I think they sort of had to show her body. They definitely deferred from showing her fall and hit the ground. You know, the way they cut it, you know, it's just like you see her fall, and then you see from a sort of Ahsoka's point of view, her looking over the edge and being like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that's crazy. Knew. Like, they could have easily done it to where, like, Ahsoka looks over and, like, it just showed her and Lux's reaction. But they actually, like, show the shot all the way down there, and all the way down there, there's Stila's body. I was just like, oh, wow, they went there. Okay, let's talk about Saw now. Actually, Lux is the one that, like, bounces back the fastest. He's just like, I'm really sad for Stila. I'm the senator of Onderon now. Yeah. It's
teenagers, man. That's the pubos, as they live in that drama, but they can bounce back.
Man, he bounces back the fastest. But we're talking about Saw here. Gosh, like, even though the death was absolutely accidental, like, Saul has to live with the fact that he took part in getting his little sister killed.
Well, he's got an ego on him, too, so he probably really believes that it was him, you know? He probably believes everything is his fault and wants to take credit for everything good, too, you know?
And he even says it. He blames himself.
Oh, like, sure.
And it's to me, like, this was one of the first of, like, many breaking points for him. And, like, we know from, like, the Rogue One books and the comics and stuff, like, he carried that with him. And even in Rebels, like, he carries a picture of Stila with him in Rebels, and he shows Ezra a picture of Stila. I mean, like, this is something that haunts him for the rest of his life. Though, your point about pointing fingers and stuff like that, I actually misremembered part of the episode. I saw this episode, like, 2-3 years ago for the first time. For some reason, I thought, like, Saw was going to blame Ahsoka because he saw Ahsoka trying to save Stila and failed.
I thought that was going to happen.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm glad that I was wrong about that because, like you said, I mean, it's one of those moments that it's nice that they all turn the blame on themselves because if they were finger-pointing. But at the same time, it would have made sense, though, because, like, in Rebels, he welcomes Ezra. Because Ezra's a Jedi, and, like, a Jedi helped them with Onderon. But at the same time, he's also still very wary of Ezra. So I'm wondering if there's a part of Saul that does blame Ahsoka a little bit.
If it was worse writing, if it was bad writing, he would have had to take it out on Lux, because Lux was, like, you know, the guy who's being protective of his sister with. But it didn't, you know, and also Lux was the one that they had they'd been having a bit of, you know, static between the two of them, but they didn't, and I like that. I like that those were just too obvious of beats to have in it, and I like that I like that a lot of, you know, the people's feelings of what happened to Stila are sort of internalized. I mean, this is in the last act, so there's not a lot of time to do it. They have a short, you know, funeral, which is reminds me a lot of the victory celebration at the end of episode one. And they had a funeral. Well, episode three hasn't come out yet, but episode three has a funeral in it. But actually, episode one has a funeral in it too, but it's a small funeral. But yeah, I'm glad they did not. I'm glad they just sort of went over the emotional reaction to her death, because just like the little love triangle, we didn't need it. We can see, we know the characters well enough at this point, and watching it through this arc, that we know how they're feeling inside, and the way that the story's told, we don't need any exposition or anything. It was really well done.
So, like I said, it makes me wonder if, like, while it wasn't, like, vocalized and we didn't see it in the episode, if Saw, like, later on, like, thought back of that moment later and realized that Ahsoka, if he secretly blamed Ahsoka, because there really is a moment in Rebels where, when he meets Ezra, he's like, oh, cool, Jedi, they helped us, it's great. But he's also very wary of trusting Ezra too much, because he's just like, well, you know, which it makes me think that, like, he might later on, when he thought back, with like, you know, the Jedi was part of getting my sister killed. Like, either that or, like, when he started going down his crazy spiral that he started blaming Ahsoka. I have to wonder about that. I would like to see that chunk in between of, like, if that was the reason he's kind of wary of Ezra, too.
That made me just think that maybe these guys don't blame Ahsoka and the Jedi as much, and maybe Saul does later on, because they were so young at this point. You know, I mean, the Jedi come to train them, you know, they're like cool space ninjas, you know, they're a big deal. So they're getting trained by, you know, it's like if you put together a band and then, like, you know, the Rolling Stones come to give you some music lessons or something like that, you know, it would be just like, whoa, and the Rolling Stones could actually treat you kind of like jerks or not really, you know, do a good job, and you'd still be like, whoa, that was great, you know? And so I think maybe, you know, they don't, you know, maybe as Saul grows older and is more mature about it, he might have been like, you know, maybe those Jedi were kind of not as great as I thought they were, you know? So
yeah. I still feel like there's part of Saul's story is missing, because there's a big chunk between now and Rebels. And he's clearly off the deep end or getting there.
Okay, here's a question. There. Does he show... I'm assuming he does. Is there any more Saw Gerrera in Clone Wars?
There's... Not in Clone Wars. There's mentions of it. Like, the only part of Saw that we know that happens between now and the actual show of Rebels is what Agent Kallus tells Zeb. In the episode where Kallus and Zeb are stuck on the frozen moon together.
This changes a lot for me.
Like, because what happens is that Kallus is talking with Zeb on the frozen moon when they're trapped together. And he was saying, like, when he was still in the Imperial Academy and he was still, like, training and they were out on a mission, they got attacked by one of Saw Gerrera's men. One of Saw Gerrera's men, who was a Lasat like Zeb, went around and shot each of Kallus's men and left Kallus alive so he could go tell the Empire about Saw.
See, I thought we were actually going to see Saw in Clone... See Saw! See, we're going to have Saw's character in Clone Wars actually become the, you know, to a point of where I thought we would have another arc with him down the line where he's become, kind of, you know, where they're like, Saw Gerrera, and then they're fighting with him and they're like, whoa, this guy's out of line, you know?
I thought
it took us there, you know, because when they were introducing, when Rogue One was coming out, and you would read about the character, you know, and they're like, and Forrest Whitaker is playing Saw Gerrera, who was, you know, and you would read the article about it that would say, oh yeah, he was a young freedom fighter in Clone Wars who had a bit of a disregard for, you know, collateral damage and innocent civilians and stuff like that. So I thought we actually saw that.
No.
So to speak.
The only thing that we know is what happened to Kallus's men.
Yeah.
Between Rebels and Rogue One.
Yeah, that's just an Easter egg that they put in there. You know, that's not real, like, character development. I thought there was going to be more. I thought this was just the introduction of Saw Gerrera in Clone Wars. Interesting.
Now, Now, granted, I mean, like Clone Wars was supposed to go on to at least 8 seasons, and right. It got cut off at 6. So they could have had.
They might have been planning on doing that, but yeah, I thought they actually did. Interesting.
It's because
even more subtle than I thought.
I mean, because I'm just looking on Wikipedia right now. Is between in the Rise of the Empire, Saul forms a group called the Partisans, which is the group that's on Rogue One. And he hired the Sot mercenaries to fight an Imperial platoon under ISB agent Kallus when they were sent to Onderon for peace. So he was on Onderon when Kallus showed up. And then it looks like he did some smuggling and he fought one of Tarkin's bands and then stuff in Rogue One. So I feel like there's definitely a chunk here between like what happens in Clone Wars and when Kallus shows up on Onderon and Saul is just killing his men, and that is the chunk that's still missing of Saul Guerrero's story is how did he get from this obviously like grieving subtle story to being a crazy person in Rebels?
Yeah, this broken, but you don't really see the results of him getting broken until Rogue One first, actually. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I can talk about Rogue One notes now that I couldn't talk about in our commentary. I'm so happy. So happy, happy, happy. There's actually just 2 notes I couldn't talk about. Well, I kind of talked about it a little bit. There's one thing that I felt was missing out of Rogue One, and that was Steela. Steela was missing out of Saul's story for me in Rogue One. And I wanted one thing, and it's in the book, it's in the comics, but it's not in the actual movie, which was a callback to Steela. So like when he's like standing in Jeddah and he stops fighting and he's ready to die, I thought he was gonna say her name or take out a picture of her or something. It wasn't in the movie and I was so upset.
It would be too distracting for people who don't know what was going on at that momentous moment. They didn't want people in the theater thinking, who's Steela? Is that a name I'm supposed to recognize or remember, and or who's this girl in the picture?
Like 3 things would have happened. Either A, that where people would have been confused by it. B, it would have, like, people probably would have inferred, like, oh, it was someone he loved and stuff like that in this moment.
He could have had a throwaway line with Jin where he said something like, you know, and you show up here on the day of, you know, Steela's
That's my very next note, but I'm almost there. But I think, like, the other 3rd thing of why I wanted it to happen was if people didn't know who Steela was, they could look into it, which could have brought more people into the Clone Wars fandom when they would have been like, who's Steela? Yeah. Oh, she was in these episodes. Let me go watch it. Like, it could have been, we were talking about it in Rogue One when we did our commentary. Like, the movies are, like, what the most people see. People don't, like, that's where the majority of Star Wars people see is the movie. And that could have been, like, if it brought one person to Clone Wars because they were curious of who a Steela person was, that would have got the job done.
Yeah, but that's from our point of view. From their point of view, if they confuse 5% of the audience and get one person to Clone Wars, or Rebels or something like that, you know, and the people, you know, the people who dig deeper are already digging deeper, you know, and there's always new people who are going to be dig deeper people, but they'll figure out who Saw Guerrero was anyway. Yeah, I would have liked that scene. I just don't see how, you know, Saw Guerrero was like, that was crazy enough that they made a character from Clone Wars real, you know. I think that was as far as they were going to go. Now, in the future, they might be encouraged and might go further. I don't know if they'll be encouraged by Saw Guerrero because he was kind of a sticking point in a lot of the reviews of it by reviewers who never watched Clone Wars or whatever. They're just like, who is this guy and why is he so messed up and goofy and then gone? And, you know, he's just sort of there and serves as a plot device and stuff like that. But I don't know. Hopefully in the future, maybe they'll feel more comfortable doing that especially yeah. after The Last Jedi, really seemed to, like, integrate Clone Wars feel to it. All right, I'll shut up. I know you got...
No. My other note is actually what you were just talking about. Because in Rogue One, there was, Jyn comes to Saul because she has the message from her father. And Saul tells Jyn that she came back to him on this of all days.
Right, right.
And I've always wondered what that meant. And I even mentioned it in our commentary. I was like, what does that mean? And I think it's the anniversary of Steela's death. Like, I really do.
Or it
like,
has to be something that just means something to him. And would and I mean,
and what she means would the most
know
to him.
She would probably know about, he had probably told her about Steela because they had a relationship, you know, like a guardian relationship, and he probably told her about Steela. But so it was, I mean, that's probably what it was, because it's not like it was Life Day or something like that, because everybody would be like, oh, happy Life Day or whatever. Or happy holidays. They're afraid to say Life Day at this point in the Star Wars universe. They say Happy Holidays. But, but you know, he could have, you know, it could have just been one more line, and he could, you know, and this Saul Guerrera, I mean, this old crotchety one, he's really melodramatic. I mean, he's sucking on his oxygen tube and, you know, stomping around on his fake foot. You know, it wouldn't have been out of character for him to whip out a picture of Steela and be just like, you remember what day this is, right? You remember who this is. Or even just like,
you came to me on this day of my sister's death. That's all I needed.
Yeah.
Because, that's how I always took that line. Like, when he said that line, I was like, is that Steela's death? I think that is. And I just, it would have been so poetic if Saul died on the anniversary of his sister. Like, that would have been just such a poetic moment.
Yeah, unless the only thing I could think of is somehow he had some psychic premonition that he was going to die that day or something like that, you know. Because he doesn't seem too surprised when he goes out and he dies. But then again, he's probably not going to be too surprised whenever or whatever circumstances he did. He would be surprised if he died of a stroke in the middle of the night, you know.
You mentioned in our Rogue One commentary that you thought it was the day that Jyn brought him the message. And I couldn't correct you. I was like, maybe. That's right. I can't say anything right now.
I was dumb then, Hope. I was ignorant at that time. You have to forgive me.
All right. I'm about to do some reading, guys. Ready? So, in 5, the final note of Steela's death.
Oh, we're on the last note, which is longer than all the other notes put together.
It is, but I had to do some summarizing. But not only is this Saul's last arc in Clone Wars, this is also Lux's last arc in Clone Wars. And so I was kind of looking into it, and Saul and Lux spent the majority of the arc butting heads. And I feel like Steela's death was what really made them put everything aside, because, you know, Lux was the one that was comforting Saul.
They
and
were
at the
starting
funeral,
to when they were actually once they started fighting, they were like, okay, we rely. They got to the point of where they relied on each other, you know, and like had a grudging trust. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was wondering like what happened to them afterwards, and actually their relationship influenced a lot of the canon outside of the TV shows and the movies. But like I said, this is Lux's last appearance in Clone Wars, but he actually showed up again in a lot of the books when Rogue One was running, because they dropped all their tie-in books at the time of the movie, and Lux popped up in 2 different Rogue One books, and it showed that him and Saul's friendship, they kept their friendship, but it also became rocky as Lux disagreed more and more with Saul's ruthless tactics. So Wikipedia did a really good job summarizing the rest of Lux's journey and how it tied into Rogue One. And it was 2 books in particular, the book Rebels Rising and Battlefront Inferno Squadron. So I'm going to read you, because, you know, now that we're starting to get closer and closer to the end of Clone Wars, because we're in season 5 and it ran for 6 seasons, you know, if I would have realized that it was the last appearance of Cad Bane, I would have gave him more of an outro or something, but I didn't realize it at the time. But now, like, We talked about how in the show we want to cover as much Clone Wars as we can in the show. So I just want to read the rest of Lux's journey for you guys, so you guys know. So here we go. After the rise of the... Thank you, Wikipedia, by the way. After the rise of the Galactic Empire, Lux married an Imperial woman and became the stepfather to her daughter. He often agreed with his wife's ideologies. I'm going to stop there. I found it very interesting that he married an Imperial.
Well, you know, but there was a point, like, he might have married the Imperial when she was in that phase when they might have been the good guys, you know?
But it's also not surprising because he was a separatist for a long time and was right. against the Republic.
Right,
so
right.
It wasn't surprising to me.
And love is blind.
Yeah. And Bon Terry had a goddaughter named Maya who became a member of Saw Gerrera's partisans. At one point, Maya traveled with Gerrera and Jen Erso to a mid-rim planet of Inusagi. And while they were on a mission there, Jen Erso witnessed Maya's death and inherited Maya's Sith skin gloves afterwards. So those gloves that Jen wears, they belonged to Lux's goddaughter. Bon Terry eventually became a member of the Rebel Alliance following Saul's death during the destruction of Jedha City. Bon Terry contacted his Imperial stepdaughter, saying Saul's death had upset him more than he could have realized, and asked that in return for giving the Empire all he had on operations about the Rebel Alliance, he wanted amnesty. His stepdaughter, happy to comply, gave him specific times and locations where he could hand himself in. Instead of turning himself in, Lux contacted Staven, the leader of a group of people called the Dreamers, who were the remains of Saul Guerrero's partisans after Jedi. You know, the Dreamers, save the rebellion, save the dream. I guess that's where that came from. Lux joined the group.
It's just funny that there's all these phrases in this in 2012 era that are all like news, ISIS and Dreamers, but they're all in totally different contexts in here.
Actually, these two books came out around Rogue One, so it was only, last year?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, these two books came out. There was a time between 2012 and 2017, 5 years where we didn't know what happened to Lux Bon Terry, and he popped up again when Rogue One came out in all these books. So he got this information from his stepdaughter and about the Imperials and gave it to Staven, who was the leftover leaders of Saul's men. Lux joined the group, becoming the code name The Mentor, and used information from his stepdaughter to give Staven a constant supply of Imperial targets to hit. After the Imperial captain Iden Versio spent months infiltrating the Dreamers along with her Special Forces team members, she revealed that she intended to kill Bon Terry in order to recover the stolen information he's possessed. Lux entreated Versio to always have hope before she fired on him. After she returned to her Imperial base, another soldier realized that her blaster had been set to stun. Instead of killing Lux, Versio had instead stunned him, leaving her to question his whereabouts. So I find it interesting because, like, Lux is like this, that's the end of it. Like, Lux was always this kind of like character that was like this diplomatic kind of guy, and he was still kind of that, and he was like that, but he kept his friendship with Saul. But as Saul became crazy, and I can understand him not joining Saul because he got his goddaughter killed, you know, Lux kind of pulled away. But it was actually the attack on Jedha City that made Lux go, no, fuck the Empire, I'm gonna aid Saul, the leftovers of Saul's men, and fight with them. And I think that's such a cool arc for Lux's character from where he started off as a little diplomat boy.
Yep, and he ends up, you know, he's not like Saw Gerrera, but he takes up more of the martial aspect of him. So yeah.
Yeah. Like, from what I was gathering from reading about, because like I said, these were two separate books. Actually, in the book Battlefront Inferno Squadron, yeah. You actually spend the entire book not knowing that the mentor is Lux Bon Terry until the very end. So I hope I'm not spoiling. I'm sorry if I'm spoiling the book for anybody, but Star Wars Explained said it's still a really good book to read. But when Versio like finally confronts him, she's like, haha, the mentor, I found you. He's like, hello, I'm Lux Bon Terry from the Clone Wars. Hello, I'm here. So you actually like spent the entire book not knowing that the mentor was Lux, because it was almost like the name Fulcrum. Like, they didn't know who was behind the name until the end of the book. So, But it looks like, you know, we still don't know where Lux is now, because she actually meant to kill him, and she accidentally stunned him. So we don't know where Lux is now in the canon universe. So he could show up again.
He could show up again.
Yeah.
Doesn't have much time in Rebels to show up.
But wouldn't that be cool, though? Like, to see Lux... Yeah, of course, Rebels is almost over, so I really doubt that Lux shows up.
Really doubt it. We probably would have seen it in the trailer.
But actually, I mean, if he's... Wait. If he's around... Rebels takes place before Rogue One, and if he does all this after Jedha is destroyed in Rogue One, he's now in original trilogy timeline.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they do some kind of slideshow, like maybe like Forces of Destiny or something, he could still show up in like comics or books that takes place during original trilogy timeline.
He could show up as a 60-year-old in Episode 9.
I doubt it, but he could.
I doubt it too.
Like the Stila in Rogue One thing, like they would have to explain who he is.
Yeah. No, but he could show up in that universe in a side movie or something, or he could show up in the Obi-Wan movie. Maybe he knows Obi-Wan.
Oh,
it's hard to say. I highly, highly doubt that too. But I'm just saying, he's young in this, so he has a lifespan to be in any phase of Star Wars movies if he wanted to.
Yeah. I just find it so cool how they like weave this expanded universe together, because Konor's characters went into the books. He could now show up in a movie. Like Saul is just the same way. Like Konor's character was in Rogue One, now in Rebels, in books. Like, it's just such a cool thing that they're doing with the expanded universe. I really like it a lot. Okay, that's all my Stila notes. Back to the regular thing. Ready?
Just back to regular old notes.
Okay, that's all of Stila's death notes. So about King Rash and his death, because Kalani shoots him. I actually would have rather... Like, they didn't have a lot of time, because it was like in the last like 4 minutes of the episode, so I get why they didn't do this. But I kind of would have liked to see King Rash try to flee the city, and the people of Onderon see him and capture him, so he could see firsthand how much he fucked up.
Yeah, I you know, that's just how the Separatists treat you, though. You know, they were showing just he was just a tool that they used, and when they were done with that tool, it's just like whoop in the garbage. Here you go, buddy. Enjoy that last fig.
I also had like an idea of. Though, even though I don't see King Denim doing this, but like them execute King Rash the way that they try to execute King Denim last episode.
Yeah.
That would have been intense.
That would have been pretty intense. It would have made Ahsoka's burn look like, a scab on your knee.
Though, it would have been interesting, though, because I could see, like, you know... Because from what I've gathered from, like, Saul's journey from, like, here to, like, when he's attacking Kallus' men, he was still on Onderon, and Onderon was probably, like, because the Imperials come to Onderon to quell rebellion uprising there. So there was probably, like, the people, like, ever since this point was just like, yeah, we're the rebel planet. And then when the Empire rises up, they're like, we're still the rebel planet. Fuck you. So that would have been kind of like a moment where the people have been like, we want his head. Give us his head. And it kind of would like, if Saul grew up in that kind of atmosphere where the entire planet is constantly rebelling against whatever authority is out there, that would make sense for his journey.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
We should be writing Clone Wars.
Yeah, we really should. Well, it's over now, so we can't.
Well, we should be writing whatever the next one is.
Though, I will say, there are always there's constant hashtags always on Twitter about finish. There's actually an entire Twitter user whose name is Finish the Clone Wars, and all they do is, like, tweet reasons that why they should finish the Clone Wars. So, to jump back for Lux for a second, I just find it funny how easily he swings back to the Republic. Like, he spent all his episodes like, no, the Republic, I'm a Separatist. Oh, I'm not a Separatist, but I'm not joining the Republic. I'm going to join Death Watch, but fuck the Republic.
Teenager.
But like,
Pubo.
Yeah, but, like, it's just... That took away what made his character so interesting to me, because I liked the fact that he was a Separatist, and he made Ahsoka see a different side of things. And he was this kind of gray character. Like, and he wasn't a bad character. He wasn't mean or cruel like all the other Separatists that we saw. But that's what made his character so cool is
he was against the Republic, but still a good guy.
His
growth as a character could only go in two ways. Either embracing the Separatists and becoming a prick because he was smart enough to notice what the Separatists were doing, even if it took his mom dying, or to go the other way, you know? So...
No, he could have gone a third way, where he's like, I'm still not joining the Republic, but I'm going to serve my people of Onderon.
Yeah.
Which would have fit his character in all the previous, like, what, six episodes that we've seen him in?
Yeah, but it wouldn't have fit as much with the puberty.
Chris, you hurt
always,
me.
You always got to figure in the puberty.
All right. Well, this is my last note, and it's also sort of long. So I started thinking about this episode, and the episode on the surface is it's good. It's good. It's not like, you know, the greatest episode of Clone Wars ever, but it's still a really good episode. And oh my god, I clicked off my notes. Hold on. I'm on a different page now. Let me go back. Go back. Okay, scroll down. But like this episode to me, like the more I started thinking about it, I started thinking about it in the bigger context of like Star Wars as a whole. And that's when I started realizing about, and this is where I was saying, like, to me, this is one of the most important episodes of Clone Wars. And this is why. Because this episode affects the rest of Star Wars as a canon. To me, like, I would put this in the top 10 important episodes of Clone Wars. And the thing is that this episode wouldn't be important if not for Rogue One and Rebels. That's what makes this episode important. This would have just been a normal adventure. And they, like, come in and they save the planet and then they leave. Just like every other Clone Wars adventures. But because of Rogue One and Rebels, the events here in Tipping Points triggers so many ripples throughout the entire canon. Because this is the beginning, this one is the beginning of the Rebel Alliance. Ahsoka takes this knowledge, and then we see in the Ahsoka novel that she's very wary of leading another group of people into rebelling against the Empire because she's seen firsthand the risks. And then this also affects Saul Guerrera, who becomes a force in the rebellion. His actions affect Mon Mothma and the other rebel leaders, and they don't want to follow his tactics, so it affects how they act. His action makes the Empire act like the Separatists in this arc, and they try to label the Rebels as terrorists, as we've seen in Rebels. This affects Rogue One in the book media, where Lux's family interacts with Jyn Erso. Jyn and Saul turn this ripple into the Rogue One movie plot, even though we all know that Bodhi is the most important character of the movie. But this episode affects how Saul works, which affects how Jyn works, which would affect how Rogue One works, which affects the original trilogy and leads into that. But it's all because of Rogue One and Rebels, of why this episode ended up becoming so important in the Star Wars canon, because it has so many implications. And it's not just Steela's death. It's what Lux does. It's what Saul does. It's what happens to Ahsoka that leads us into the future shows and movies. And it all starts here. It all starts on Onderon. It all starts in these episodes, and it's here. And that's why this is suddenly one of the most important episodes of Clone Wars, and it's because of this other media that affected it.
You know who probably gets a lot of credit for that?
Dave Filoni?
Dave Filoni, and even more important is Pablo Hidalgo, probably.
Yeah.
Because he works with the main movies, too, for continuity and stuff like that. Yeah.
Actually, and Dave Filoni and Pablo, I know Dave was. I'm not sure about Pablo, but they were both on the Rogue One set to help guide the story, and they helped with the script as well.
So, but, like, you know, that's part of Hidalgo's job is to make all this stuff shore up. And he's been there through, you know, when it was owned by George Lucas and now when it's owned by Disney. So he can still connect those two. So it's really cool. And he does a very good job out of it.
You know, this is, again, just, like, shows how cool, like, the multimedia universe is throughout all the course of all this. Because it really does. And I think I was saying this a few episodes ago when I was talking about, like, how they streamlined the canon. it's really true, and it's so cool because this, like, this wouldn't be an important episode if it wasn't for Rebels and Rogue One. Like, that's, they are what made this episode so important.
Well, they could throw in, they could do things like just throw Easter eggs in all the way and cross characters over, but they're doing it with emotional and story resonance too, so it's, you know, like a proper story.
Yeah.
So it's really good.
So that's why, like, this episode is just so cool to me. It's just, it has so many implications for future canon, and it's amazing.
And
so
nobody knew it when they were making it, and
Knew. Like, when I watched this episode the first time, like really, I was just like, oh, I love Steela. Oh, no, Steela's dead. And I was like, okay, that was a fun episode of Star Wars. And move on to the next.
I really don't believe that, you know, that when the people who were making it either were going like, oh, this is going to go somewhere, some, you know, 10 years down the line, you know.
At most, they were like, this is going to go into, like, season 8 or 9 of Clone Wars.
Right.
At most.
Right.
Which is just, again, like, why it was so important to me. And I talked about this at the end of the Rogue One commentary, about, like, why it was so cool that Saw was in Rogue One to me. Like, it was just, it just solidified everything I loved about this show. It was, they made the show so cool to me that, like, it could... The show that I love so much now had, like, huge implications and, like, huge effects and, like, impacted the current movies, because we had never really saw that before, you know? Like, before Disney bought it out, like, Clone Wars took place between episode 2 and 3, so it, like, made episode 3 better, because it was like, oh, we know the clones now. It's sad that they're killing the Jedi, because we know who these people are. That was the end of it. But then, like, Disney bought it, and... they started bringing all this Clone Wars stuff into Rebels, and they started bringing it into Rogue One, and they brought it into, like, Force Awakens and stuff like that. So it's just so cool to me, and I absolutely love everything that they're doing with all this and keeping Clone Wars important. Keep Clone Wars important, 2018. But that's all I have for the episode. So are you ready to score this puppy up?
I'm ready.
All right, score it up, Chris. Did I change your score at all?
No. Aww. I thought about it, but no, I'm pretty firm on it.
Not even like a little, like, 0.25 of a point up.
Oh, jeez.
Like a 0.25 up.
No, I've been scoring higher than you lately, so I think I'm okay. I'm usually below you, so I think this is a return to the status quo. Yeah, I gave it an 8.5, which is the highest of the this arc, and I really liked it. It was a really good episode, and like you said, though, it's a lot better in the wider context. If there wasn't that wider context, it wouldn't be like one of my all time favorite Clone Wars episodes or anything, or I wouldn't think about it as much as the thought we've put into it for this episode. But it was really good, you know? And so, yeah, 8.5. It's a strong episode.
For me,
And Hondo.
And Hondo. Always Hondo. For me, the episode itself is it's a good episode. It's not the best episode of Clone Wars. It's not the strongest. But, I mean, it's still a great episode. It has really awesome battles and, like, great character moments. Steela's death is, like, such a tragedy, but it doesn't feel cheapened, you know? It's not like, oh, no, she died, let's move on. Like, it's actually, like, impactful, and it means something. And it's resolving the story arc and all that stuff. What makes this episode so good is Rogue One and Rebels, and the wider context of Star Wars. This arc was already good, but those influences made this episode great. And this is such an important piece of Star Wars, and it just can't be overlooked. So I gave it a 9 out of 10.
I was expecting that, or even higher, yeah.
Not quite as high, because, like, a lot of my 9s were, like, the Umbara arc. It's not going to, like, score higher than the Umbara arc. So
yeah, Nerdy Rex was gone by this episode, too.
You haven't had a 10 episode in all of Clone Wars, I don't think.
I don't think so, not yet.
Have you had any 9s? I think you have.
I have. I've had some 9s. I think I've even had some that have crossed over 9 a little bit. I'll have to go back and look, but I think I have.
Something I would actually like to do is, when we get to the end of Clone Wars, look back at the series as a whole and find, like, to us, the most important episodes that, like, affect the canon, you know?
Yeah.
I think that'd be a really cool thing to do when we look at back at Clone Wars as a whole. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. This week, this comes from two episodes, because it comes from our 100th episode, Part 1 and Part 2. And just so you know, Chris, the way I did this is, if there's a space in between them, they're separate comments, but if everybody is bunched together, like where it says, like, Patrick and Mike and Smith, they're talking to each other. That's how I separated it.
All right. I think I can handle that. Okay, all so right.
100th episode, Part 1 and 2.
First, we hear from the Boston contingent. We got Chris Tyler being his usual succinct self with awesome.
Yeah, hair metal hero. La, 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 la.
And then Paul C. Kelly comes in with, great show. Glad I could take part. Just a heads up for next time, the spelling of my last name is with the E-Y. Yeah, I know. At the end. Don't worry, everyone messes that up. Editing was classic. I got a Dirty Water and Yoda theme added in. Yes, you did. Sweet. Look forward to many more. Many hundreds more? Oh, gee. Okay. All right, we got Patrick Delmore. He says, love the episode, love the musical.
Wait, where's your Patrick Delmore voice?
Oh, shit. Thanks, Hope. Yeah. Thanks, for good catch. Love the episode, love the musical themes, particularly witchcraft. I'm glad I've gotten to talk to Dario about The Last Jedi since this. Hoping Aaron and I can one day record an episode where we compare The Last Jedi and The Empire Strikes Back, as well as taking note of how many similarities there are between The Last Jedi and Star Trek Discovery Pilot. Whoa. Okay, that would be interesting. I have to think about that. Then Mike Zumo pipes in with, you might want to throw Return of the Jedi into that comparison as well. Yes, you would. And Patrick Delmore says, there's a recording with Dario, Chris, Scott, and me, and we talk out Return of the Jedi pretty heavily. Yes, I remember that. Okay, we got one from Dario Gonzalez who says, perfect show to listen to when I'm snowed in. Congratulations, you two. Proud to contribute to the diabetes.
And what you don't see here is him and Brian Weber went back and forth with, like, diabetes pictures from the guy, the diabetes guy. And they, then there was, Brindley. Like, and then there was, like, diabetes cats. So that's what you don't see in this.
That happens on the internet a lot. That the word diabetes does usually trigger Wilford Brimley memes, and then grumpy cat memes. All right, so we got Gene Hendricks says, in case anyone, like Hope, who had no idea what I was talking about, here's the link to Tales of the Jedi. There was also a few follow-ups, but this one was the main one I was referencing. And then he gives us a link to Tales of the Jedi.
Ah, I'm dropping stuff.
All right. We got another one from Gene Hendricks. It says, on another note, I know how much was cut out of my conversation, all the Star Trek talk, and I'd love to hear what everyone else talked about that was off topic. And Aaron Henley says, I'll let you know when I listen to my part. I have a feeling it was a lot. It actually wasn't a lot. And then I come in and say, I don't think I cut the Trek talk from the main conversation. I think we talked about it technically before we started. So, and Gene Hendricks says, yeah, that was pretty much warm-up talk. And, now we have another one from Patrick Delmore. Says, really well edited show. You cannot tell which parts have been trimmed. And then I said, I probably cut over an hour combined. Yeah, at least. That, of course, after bragging about usually editing nothing, which is true. Mostly, honestly, I just cut out Hope and I talking, which is true.
I left that in there because the 100th episode really was well edited, Chris. It was amazing.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you. Oh, it's that time.
It is that time.
We're holding a little thing. It's like a little candy. It looks like it's about like a third. It's like the size of like a third of a ice cream sandwich.
So if you're wondering why Chris and I are eating candy, Chris is a babe. A babe. A teen babe. With his fries. And he hates American Kit Kats. So our friend Dario Gonzalez, who contributes to our diabetes, sends us candy from all over the world to review. And today we're doing Knoppers, spelled with a K, which is a milk hazelnut wafer. And these are from Germany, right?
Yes.
Yes, Germany.
Oh, it smells delightful. It smells delightfully hazelnutty.
Oh, man. Oh, my God, it's amazing. Send me 12 more of these.
It's like top layer is wafer. The second layer is chocolate and hazelnuts.
I think the second layer is chocolate wafer. And then some kind of cream stuff, and then a chocolate bottom.
Well, it's like chocolate. It's like it's sort of like Nutella, but it's got. And then under it, yeah, is another wafer. Then like you know, like your vanilla cream. Then another wafer, and then a bottom layer of chocolate. It's pretty
delicious.
Spectacular, I gotta say.
Oh my god! You know, Dario, I won't say no if you want to send me like 12 more of these.
I'm washing this down with Dr. Pepper, too. I'm going to be, like, quivering on the floor after this.
My God. That's so good. Thank you, Dario. Well, we wrapped up Onderon. So I'm still enjoying my candy. So good. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me hiding out on Onderon.
I was about to say, you can find him quivering on the floor.
Quivering on the floor, swiftly going into a diabetic coma like Jerry Garcia in 1987.
Diabetes.
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our massively outdated website. Full, just overflowing with podcasts. You can go to our front page and you'll see a list of all the podcasts that come out, which is just a ton of them. We're working on a plan to get it better organized, but hey, you guys know how that is. We're also on Facebook, and if you go to the Two True Freaks Facebook page, we post up all the shows that come out on the network on there, and we also post up all our shows on our Twitter feed, which is Two True Freaks. Just search Two True Freaks on Twitter and you'll find it. And you'll also find the magic man, the dancing man, the podcasting machine, Gene. The podcasting machine.
Gene.
I didn't know if you forgot what you were supposed to do or if you were just doing something really dramatic.
I was doing like a William Shatner, like a Shatner, like, bottom bump.
Gene.
Gene. Tip word drive to Gene, Mr. Spock. I don't know. I don't watch Star Trek. I don't know what that means.
Anyway, where can they find you, Hope?
Something on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, I just want to point out. Trentus Magnus, Jabs Reality, which is one of our shows. I noticed this the other day that he did an episode about the state of the DCEU, like the DC movies, but he did it with my friend Rebecca Johnson. And I was like, Rebecca? And I know her from two of our friends, like our mutual friends, used to do a one-pot, which is how I met Rebecca. And then we've been friends ever since, even well after she got out of the show, like, we're still friends. So I was just really excited to see my friend Rebecca Johnson on one of Trentus's shows. So I'm just really, really excited about that.
Apparently, that's cool.
She told me she's been on Trentus's show a few times. So
I think that's
really cool. So I just wanted to throw that out there. But you can find me at Jigas and Jedi. That is our Twitter account that I run. I'm also on there at Hope Molinax, and I'm also the news writer for WhatTheFangirl.com. Recently, actually wrote a summary of the two solo trailers that we were talking about at the beginning of this episode, and I was giving kind of my reactions to what I felt. But the main thing, I was like, you know, this needs to be a lot like Rogue One. It needs to be a genre movie first, and then like a Star Wars movie second. And I used the comparison of Captain America Winter Soldier, that it was a political thriller, that you could replace Steve Rogers with a random soldier dude and the movie would still work. And so like, and that's what we were talking a lot about the formula of Rogue One when we did our commentary,
where it's a war movie, and it could have been about any war. It didn't have to be in the Star Wars universe. So, I talk about, like, my reactions to the Solo movie. So you can go check that out over at whatthefangirl.com. Well, I'm so excited. We have babies next week.
Yes.
You don't know what that means.
I have no idea, but I'm ready for it.
Well, okay, I'm going to give you a preview. So the next arc of Clone Wars is, I guess, Ahsoka is just like, oh, man, that Alderaan thing was crazy. And so she gets to take 5 little Padawans on a mission, like on a journey, and she gets to be like the teacher. And these 5 little Padawans for the next 4 episodes goes on a journey with her. And David Tennant is there. And it's fun. It's all adorable. I really enjoy this next arc.
All right. So we're going from pubos to little shavers.
There's a baby Wookiee. There's a little Wookiee, and he's cute, and I love him and stuff. So I'm very... Actually, now I'm looking at it, David Tennant's not in the next episode. I think it's the episode after it. Is it Test of Strength? Yes, so David Tennant's not in the next episode. He's in the episode after it. But we are finally getting into the David Tennant arc that he won an Emmy for.
Oh,
or
cool.
I'm sorry, I think he was nominated for an Emmy as a guest role on a show, on an animated show, so... It's just, this is a really cool arc. What I like about this arc, too, is there's some sort of, like, rebel implications. It reminds me a lot of, like, Rebels when season 1, when Kanan is training Ezra as a Padawan. So I'm really excited to see what you think about it.
I can't wait. I haven't seen a baby Wookiee since Itchy, what's his name?
Scratchy?
Scratchy. What the hell is his name? Itchy was a grandfather.
Chewbacca's
Mala's Itchy
son. It's
a stupid name.
Lumpy.
Yeah. So we're gonna get to see him. I wonder if he looks like Lumpy. Can't wait.
Yay! I promise you, it's way better.
Yeah, that's a low bar.
Yeah, it's not a hard bar to get over.
Right over it. Yeah.
It's like the bar is on the floor, and actually,
the bar is buried 15 feet underground. Hope it's
yeah.
You need a
you
metal
don't even
detector
know the bar
to
know, is there.
Even know where the bar is.
It's down there with like you like bury your like Wi-Fi cables.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the bar protecting the Wi-Fi cable. So it's an important bar, because if you lost it, you know, you would lose your Wi-Fi, but it's underground. All right, well...
All right, we better get out of here.
join us next week, where Yoda continues not to get candy.
Oh.
Ha-ha.
Okay.
Bye!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.